Welcome to the second episode of the Strength Academy podcast. Mundo here once again with Grayson.
How you doing, guys?
And today we are probably going to talk about recovery, but we'll also go into some other tangents, I'm sure.
We can always get a little off track.
Yeah, exactly. Last night, one of the guys from the gym is going away, and he wanted to go to a Pentatonix concert. We went to dinner before that and ate too much food.
Yeah, entirely too much food. It was how many appetizers can we choke down? It was mostly cheese curds.
Yeah, definitely a lot of cheese curds. And then the concert after was pretty cool. Albuquerque's a very weird place in the fact that you can go to pretty much any concert and there'll be little kids there. And then some older folks too, and everything in between. But yeah, so it was a good night. All right, so on that note, let's move into good nights and sleep and recovery and things like that. So Grayson, go ahead and start us off with some of the things that you do or that you recommend for recovery.
Well, so there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of different things that you can do, and some of them are extremely expensive and some of them are inexpensive or free. So I kind of like to stick towards the less expensive side of the recovery spectrum. I know that a lot of people have a hard time affording things like a weekly massage and stuff like that. So the number one thing for making sure that you're recovered for your training to me is that you're eating enough. And if you're manipulating body weight, trying to move down to a weight category, it's making sure that the foods you're eating are helping you recover from your training. Getting enough food in is the number one thing. I mean, I think that so many people undereat because we're busy and, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable be eating all the time.
That makes sense, yeah. I guess for me at the top of the list would be sleep. If you don't sleep, you're not going to recover. All the hormones that your body produces while you're, you know, in those REM stages, those different cycles of sleep, it's very important. But food was probably right up there with me for me as well. But sleep for sure. And a lot of people, they have this mentality, you know, hustle and grind. Sleep is for the weak.
Oh, yeah.
You can sleep when you're dead. And for an athlete, that's not going to work. Maybe if you were, you know, out there trying to build an empire, or you were, you know, trying to start something up that was very time consuming, I could see that. But if you're an athlete, especially a strength athlete, you're getting beat up every day and your body needs that time to recover.
And that sleep is, you know, people think, oh, I slept for 6 hours, that's good enough. No, you need 8 to 9 at, like, is optimal for heavy strength training. You know, one of the best, I like looking back at kind of the old time strongmen every now and then. I think that era is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it's before standardized modern barbells, before drugs, before supplements, before anything. And I believe it was Eugene Sandow or Arthur Saxon. One of those two guys was rumored to be sleeping 13 hours a night.
Oh, wow.
And was just chugging milk and eating whole chickens and sleeping half the day. And he was able to do a bent press with 300 pounds.
Wow.
That's a lot. So, I mean, you can get incredibly, incredibly strong just by doing those two things correctly. You know, what did people do before we had any sort of sports science? They ate a lot and they slept a lot.
They slept a lot, yeah. So, what kind of foods do you recommend people eat? Because, like, I know that you believe that food is really important for recovery. So, what kinds of things do you think people should be eating and the things that they shouldn't be eating that might cause them problems?
Well, so, you know, things that are generally good for improving, you know, your weightlifting training, as long as you're not on, you know, a specific diet that kind of restricts some things. I think that, you know, choosing things like red meat or pork or beef over things like chicken is usually pretty good, just because it has a little bit higher vitamin content. You have a lot more of the B complex vitamins in beef than you do in chicken. Although sometimes, if it's the choice between eating a little bit of beef and enough chicken, you want to eat enough first.
Right, yeah, that makes
sense. I think that, you know, you want to be keeping some greens in your diet, you know, most of the time, like 3 times a day, you know, eating some sort of spinach, broccoli, zucchini, whatever you like, as long as it's a vegetable and it's not iceberg lettuce, because you're wasting your time.
Right.
Just eat something that's darker in color, guys. It's technically a vegetable, but it might not be helping you as much. Some people respond really well to dairy. Some people don't. That's kind of up in the air, but it is a fairly cheap way to get in some calories and some calcium and kind of go that way. But yeah, keeping things pretty simple as far as carbohydrates go, you know, thinking about rice and sweet potatoes and over, you know, Pop-Tarts. I mean, the main thing that can mess with recovery is eating a lot of sugar can really make you inflamed, and you might be getting enough calories in, but your knees are going to start hurting, and that, you know, doesn't counterproductive.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And you kind of experienced that when you were doing some dirty bulking.
Yeah.
I mean, you made it, what, I think a week and a half slamming milkshakes every day before everything started to flare up.
Yeah, about 2 weeks. And so I mentioned this before, but I was trying to get a little bit heavier, and I did it by going to Sonic pretty much every day for 2 weeks, and they had half price shakes. This isn't a plug for Sonic, by the way. But yeah, like half price shakes every night after 8 o'clock, and I would go and just get like a 32 ounce shake, and I would just feel gross. And then I'd also be eating pints of ice cream, and I just felt terrible. not just physically, but like mentally wise. I'm just like, oh, I'm just sticking all this sugar in my body.
And I mean, that's not to say you can't live at all. I think, you know, we all eat some stuff from time to time that isn't great. But, you know, saving those things for, I think, having a day of the week where if you're in your weight class solidly and you're maintaining, you can have one day a week where you kind of go all out, you know? So say, you know, you come in and you just finished up our usual heaviest day of training is Saturdays. So say you finished up Saturday and you want to eat a lot of extra food that day, that's probably going to be fine. You're not going to go over enough to put 2 kilos on in one day. You might improve your recovery a little bit as long as you're, you know, eating good foods. And then if you want to add in a couple of treats in that time window, that's going to be fine. You know, I don't think that it's good to beat yourself up or totally restrict yourself from things.
Right.
Because it just makes it harder to comply with. Like, it's harder to stick to. If you're like, I'm eating nothing but chicken and broccoli, you're going to be really unhappy.
Yeah, that's that bodybuilder diet where you're just eating chicken and broccoli, or chicken and rice.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much every day.
Just so dry.
And then, yeah, it's just miserable. I had a guy that I worked with, and he was preparing for a show, and he would just bring in chicken and rice every day. He just looks so miserable. He's just angry all the time. He just watched us eat pizza and, you know, eat whatever we wanted, and he's just going to town on a pound of chicken and rice. Yeah, he was pretty unhappy, though. So what do you think about other types of recovery? Let's say massage and maybe some of that in that realm.
Well, some of the extra stuff you can be doing if you're going to want to work with somebody, getting a good, specifically sports massage or trigger point therapy.
Right.
If you kind of go to like just a day spa massage, it's going to feel nice. But if you want the kind of massage that's really going to be kind of breaking up some adhesions in that muscle tissue, you're going to need a massage that's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, if you fell asleep, they might not be digging in quite enough, or they might have not found your real problem areas. So like a full body massage is like a little too much for like an hour if you really have something to work on.
Right.
So, you know, if you're really tight in that upper back, you know, getting a sports massage where that's the focus of the whole thing can be really, really helpful. If you don't have access to that, as I know it can get fairly expensive to do even, you know, twice a month massage, making sure that you're doing some sort of foam rolling, self myofascial release stuff can be helpful. It's easy to go overboard on that. You probably don't need to do any more than 15 minutes on any one given area. Outside of that, it's probably a little bit of overkill. Because it's really easy to get caught up in, like, I'm just going to foam roll for 3 hours before I work out. And it's like, well, you probably could have gotten the majority of those benefits in the first 15 minutes.
Right.
So I think the massage is definitely a good thing. I think that hot baths usually, like, especially like Epsom salt baths, are really good. Again, with a lot of these recovery things, it's got to be to a point that it's almost uncomfortable. So like the process I use for hot baths, and I try to do at least once a week, after something that I feel kind of beat up on, but setting it to where it's almost all hot water and using a ton of Epsom salt, to where it should take you a little bit of time to work your way into the bath.
Right, yeah.
And then whatever is not submerged in the water should be sweating, is like the level of hot bath. So you got to make sure that you're drinking a ton of water while you're in there, because that's also one of our strategies for cutting weight for a meet.
Right. All right, so for my take on massage, definitely a sports massage or deep tissue, kind of like similar. And they're going to get in there and it's going to be really painful, not in a injury type way, but in a very uncomfortable type way. Those muscles that are getting used are going to be tight and wound up. So getting the elbow in there, putting some body weight on those points to release that tension is going to be somewhat unpleasant, but that's part of getting that massage, because those things have been getting beat up, so they're going to require a little bit of work. And if you walk into a massage parlor and it smells funny, and they're open 24 hours, that's probably not the place you want to get a massage from.
reconsider your life at that point.
Yeah, reconsider. If you got to park in a back parking lot and kind of sneak into the massage parlor, that's definitely not the kind of massage that you need to recover. Another thing that I like along the lines of the baths, the hot baths with Epsom salt, is contrast showers. So what I normally do is I'll start off with a warm shower and start off going 30 seconds cold after that. And then I'll go back to a minute of warm and then try to build up to a minute of cold. And then another minute of warm and finish off with as long as I can stay in the cold water, maybe a minute 30, 2 minutes, and then finish off with the warm part of the shower. So just getting that contrast with those two heats on my body usually does pretty well for helping me to recover.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the contrast shower is you really, you know, the warm water kind of opens up circulation and then the cold water kind of closes it down. So you're kind of flushing blood in and out. Those contrast showers work really well. There's a place in town that kind of, it's called Albuquerque Baths. It's kind of it's a spa, but it's pretty cheap to access for, you know, as long as you want. And they have a sauna and a cold plunge and a hot tub.
Oh, nice.
So occasionally I like to go down there and kind of, and you can do this at a Define Fitness or any sort of place that has this, but I kind of like it there because it's cleaner. Than Define Fitness.
Yeah.
I don't really like the sauna over at Define.
You're not going to end up with foot warts.
yeah. Slightly less disease-carrying potential. But yeah, so going back and forth between a cold pool of water and the sauna, and kind of going back and forth and doing maybe 5 rounds of 5 minutes in the sauna, 5 minutes in the cold, same sort of thing. Using that contrast can be really helpful and just super relaxing. I kind of want to come back and talk about sleep a little bit, because I feel like both the contrast shower and the hot bath, if you do them late at night, you sleep super well.
Okay.
So that's one thing that I kind of use, like if I a little wound up. Like I drank 4 Bang energy drinks during training that day. Yeah. You know, if I really need to unwind before going to bed, I feel like those sort of things kind of help set me up. But I know that you have a pretty, you know, in-depth sleep ritual and some strategies that you use to kind of make sure that you're getting enough sleep. So if you want to talk about some of those.
Yeah. So usually I will try not to use a lot of like electronics. The phone is one of them. The TV is another one. It's just looking at that screen or even seeing something that kind of gets your mind going, kind of just keeps it wound up. And when I sleep, my room doesn't have a TV in it. I don't spend any time in there. My room is just for sleeping. And I keep it really dark. The room is nice and cool. And I, in the summertime, I usually just sleep with that, like a sheet. Like, there's no comforter or a blanket or anything like that. It's just a sheet, and try to get it as cool as possible. In the wintertime, I'll probably just wear, you know, a pair of shorts and still sleep like that, almost naked, and keep my room really cold. I sometimes crack a window open in the wintertime. And it doesn't get super cold here in New Mexico, but it gets cold enough to where it'll drop the temperature in a room. And like my sleep schedule, I usually sleep about 8, maybe 9 hours, just depends. But the quality of sleep is really important to me, because if I don't sleep well, I don't recover. And just my ability to focus and stay more committed to what I'm doing during a training session really does... Sleep really does have an effect on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the avoiding screens before heading to bed, there's actually a physiological response to a lot of that. So the looking at screens, and specifically blue light, stimulates wakeful chemicals in the mind and prevents you from producing melatonin and getting ready to sleep. So if you're under fluorescent lighting or looking at a screen, you're basically telling yourself that it's still daytime, and your brain doesn't really know the difference.
Right.
So what some people do if they, you know, need to watch a little TV to unwind is you can buy blue blocking sunglasses. They're these goofy looking yellow sunglasses. You can get them on Amazon, and just wearing those around your house can kind of help with that. I'm trying to shift over to where I'm not using overhead bright lighting, but using kind of like wrapped lamps and stuff like that as like, so that to simulate sunset in my own house.
Okay.
For about an hour before I go to sleep, to try to get that kind of like, okay, it's kind of dark, start to get a little bit sleepy, try to stay off the phone. The cold is awesome. Like it's got to be cool in that room, because your body temperature has to drop a little bit for you to actually kind of start getting ready to fall into that deep sleep.
Right.
And that's why those contrast showers and hot baths, if you get out of a hot bath, you kind of evaporatively cool, and you end, you know, if you just kind of stand there until you're dry, you're going to go from that warm to cooling down quite a bit. And that kind of gets you ready to just like pass out right away.
Okay. So by, air drying, do you mean just like stand there with your arms wide but naked, like Benjamin Franklin on a hilltop?
Yeah, that's exactly it, man. Okay. That's exactly it. Yeah, just stand there till you're not, you know, dry your hair and then just like shake off like a dog.
Nice.
And you know, it cools you down a little bit more. Where it starts to get unpleasant is in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you don't have to worry about lowering your body temperature as much then, but right. What it was 105 yesterday.
Yeah, it was pretty
close. And that makes getting to sleep a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to our nature. It's hot during the day, and then when it's nighttime, it cools down. The sun's not out. The temperature drops. It's kind of how our natural circadian rhythm should be built around.
Oh yeah.
And we disrupt that with the way that we have to work and things like that, sometimes late into the night, get up really early in the morning type thing. I heard this study where people have different optimal periods that they're awake, or they're more productive when they're awake during certain periods. Some people work better late into the night. Some people are early morning risers and they'll work really well in the morning. A lot of people end up being midday type thing where they're productive probably from, let's say, 9 to 1, and then that crash at 2 o'clock where you feel like you need a nap happens and everything goes downhill. But one of the things is I lost my train of thought.
Well, so while you kind of regather that, I mean, the napping thing, nap.
Oh, yeah, nap thing.
Take naps. Yeah. You know, if you have a little bit of time, like, you know, practices at 4, you get off work a little bit early, it's 2 o'clock, lay down for 45 minutes. You know, that's, have a snack, lay down, take a nap, and you're going to, as long as you don't try to roll out of bed and 5 minutes later hit the gym, you're going to have a pretty good workout. You know, you can add that sleep. So if you're working a job that doesn't really allow you to get that 9 hours of sleep, try to find a time in there to take a nap, you know, definitely. Even just like, even if you don't take a nap, just laying down for 10 minutes and focusing on your breath is super relaxing. And just doing something relaxing is helpful for recovery. So like taking time to like get out of the work that you're doing, or not taking time to not really think about training, like go for a walk, kind of clear your head. Those sort of things can really help. Because if you're always amped up and, you know, pushing super hard, you're never kind of letting that other nervous system. So you've got your sympathetic nervous system, which is that fight or flight. And that's where, you know, that's tuned up when you're pushing it in the gym, you kind of get that adrenaline rush. But then that parasympathetic nervous system is where you're resting and digesting your food and recovering. And essentially what a lot of these recovery things are trying to do is stimulate that and down-tune that sympathetic response. Like, because your body will get stuck there. Like, oh man, I need to be ready to go right now. And letting that down-tune a little bit is, you know, basically what all of these recovery modalities do. Right. You know, if you're having a day at the spa, even if it's not the contrast, just doing something relaxing for yourself for 2 hours is going to make you recover better just because you're more relaxed.
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, might some recovery stuff be placebo? For sure. But does it matter if it's working for you? Not at all.
Yeah.
So keep, find something that works for you. You know, if you've got, if it ends up being a weird tradition, then that's okay. You know, if it's super relaxing for you to like dig a hole in your backyard for 30 minutes every night, I can't judge if it makes you sleep better and you're relaxed and it's, you know, you feel better.
Do you fill it back in or do you just leave it out there?
I mean, I guess you could go either way, but seeing how deep of a hole you can dig is a pretty fun game.
That would be interesting. yeah, for sure. So my train of thought was to alarm clocks.
Oh, okay.
Do you think waking up to an alarm clock is more disruptive to, like, your mood and things like that? Because I used to use a natural alarm clock. So basically, it's a lamp alarm clock.
Oh.
And closer to the time that you need to wake up, it gets brighter and brighter. Just like if you were simulating like a sunrise. So I used to wake up really well, as opposed to that fire alarm where you just wake up and you're panicked. And not everybody can do that, but do you think that's a good way to kind of start the day?
I haven't tried that personally, but it sounds awesome. You know, like I like the theory behind that, right? Where you're kind of naturally... Because, you know, we're stimulated to wake up to light, you know. If the sun comes up, you kind of start waking up and rolling around a little bit. And by the time it's bright, you're kind of up and ready to go. I don't know if that would work for me because I can sleep through a sunrise pretty easily. But I think that's a really good way to go because I just, I hate my alarm.
Yeah.
Like I'm a chronic snooze pusher.
Okay.
So like if I have to set an alarm for 30 minutes before I actually want to get out of bed because I know I'm hitting that button at least twice.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that, you know, something along those lines, if it works for you and it's less stressful, that's absolutely great.
Okay.
Because yeah, there's the, yeah, if you didn't get enough sleep and you're 6 hours after you lay down, that alarm's screaming at you. You kind of start the day on a bad foot.
yeah, for sure. And then, okay, so for de-stressing and some of the things that you were talking about giving your mind a break, taking a nap and things like that, or just laying down and breathing. So one of the things I like to do is meditate. I used to do it before I work out, but it's really hard when you get into the gym and there's music going already and people are dropping weights. It's kind of difficult to focus and block those things out. For myself. So I end up waking up and one of the first things I do is usually meditate. Start the day off with just some calm breathing exercises, just trying to block out all the constant noise that your mind produces. And your mind will want to do that. So it's just a practice of just letting those things kind of flow by in your mind, not really focusing on them. And it helps you throughout the day too, because those aggravating little things that come up, and then they always do, sitting in traffic or just people being, you know, the way they are in general. I call it negative visualization, where you just know things are going to happen, so you're just kind of already expecting them to do that, and it's not surprising. But meditation has really helped me in numerous ways in my life, not just in weightlifting.
So when you sit down and meditate, do you use one of those like Headspace, like a meditation app? Or are you doing kind of that stoic, pessimistic meditation where you're kind of thinking about all the things that could go wrong that day and learning to just not care about them? Are you kind of doing more of like that Buddhist kind of let the thoughts go by? Or are you focusing your attention on not being reactive to stressful things?
So I use Calm, which is an app, and it's guided meditation. They also have meditation that's just breathing, and there's like a chime just to bring you back to that present moment. But I like the guided meditation because they start you into it, they ease you into that breathing cycle, focusing on the breath, just letting thoughts kind of acknowledging them and just pushing them down the stream, so to speak. I really like that. But the negative visualization is a stoic principle, and that's more of like a passing thing, or just briefly in the morning. Like, I know this is going to happen. Somebody's going to try to test my patience, or there's going to be something throughout the day that might be frustrating. And that's not really, I'm not dwelling on being pessimistic. It's more of I'm preparing myself for that eventuality. So it's less stressful when I encounter it. It's also something that's just not surprising, and usually that's the thing that makes people upset and pushes them into that stress range, is when they're surprised by whatever situation that they really kind of know happens every day.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of think the stoic approach is kind of interesting, where you're kind of trying to train yourself to not ignore that things are going to be happening, but just kind of accepting like, oh yeah, somebody's definitely going to cut me off in traffic today.
Yeah, especially in Albuquerque.
And I have a choice about whether or not to get upset about that.
And, yeah, you know, don't use your blinker ever here. Don't, you know, the blinker's not, it's an optional thing here in Albuquerque.
Absolutely, absolutely. But so is getting angry about it.
That's,
you know,
true. No,
so
that's
if
true.
if you're spending your whole day getting pissed, that's going to negatively impact your recovery, because yeah, you're, again, stimulating that fight or flight, because you're trying to fight everybody that cuts you off in traffic, which you also see quite a bit here in Albuquerque.
That's very true.
But
yeah, so in the gym, it's also, you don't want to visualize missing anything, but you want to visualize maybe the frustration of things not going the way you want them to during a training session, but still being able to accomplish it. I think a lot of people, they come into the gym and they're just not prepared mentally for the things that could go not the way you want them to, and they get really frustrated. They start to break down. They don't want to do it anymore. And I think for me, meditation kind of helps, just knowing that no matter how I feel about that lift, that moment, I'm just going to move on to the next one. There's no point in dwelling on it. It's already done. It's just like an arrow. You pull it back, you aim, and you release it. But once that arrow has left that, you know, that rest, it's not coming back. The shot's gone. You either hit it where you, what you were aiming for, or you don't, and you just have to move on to the next one.
And that's why I kind of like, lately we've been doing a lot of sets in the program where we work up to a heavy set and then dial it back. And what I really like about that is I see it a lot in, you know, intermediate and beginner lifters, but I mean, I think we all, like everyone does it to a certain degree, but you get better at dealing with it.
Right.
But learning to not let a missed lift. So if you're building up to a top set and you only make 2 out of 3 of them and you have to drop back and do your drop sets off of your last successful set, learning to not beat yourself up about that. So like, because there are going to be missed lifts.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're learning to deal with psychologically, like, oh, if I miss one, I can just adjust that and I can learn from that miss rather than like, oh, I suck.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just beat yourself up for no reason. And it's kind of like self-talk as well. You're going to be harder on yourself if you have that mentality of holding on to things as opposed to just letting it go, moving on, and just trying to do better next time. So one thing I wanted to ask you about was cryotherapy. I used to do cryotherapy really regularly. We have a couple places here in Albuquerque that offer it. And when I was doing it, I felt that there was a lot of benefit to it. And not just physically, but mentally as well. You have to be a little mentally tough to sit there for 3 minutes in a nitrogen-filled tank and endure pretty cold temperatures. But it's supposed to reduce inflammation and have some other benefits as well, some to metabolism. There's studies on it. For me, it worked. And it might have been that placebo effect, but what's your take on it, Grayson?
Well, so I think that, you know, cold therapy, I think the literature is a little bit mixed. Like sometimes it works really well. There are some benefits to doing it, especially leading into a competition area, because what essentially you're doing with cold therapy, whether it's cryotherapy or a traditional ice bath, poor man's cryotherapy. Pick up a couple bags of ice at McDonald's, throw them in your tub, and get in there.
I've done that before.
And that is also extremely unpleasant. But what you're essentially doing with that is you're kind of shutting down some inflammation response. So you're kind of decreasing inflammation in the joints, and that can kind of make you feel better on the next session. But the dangerous line you walk with cryotherapy and cold therapy is that the inflammation you get within the musculature is part of the growth stimulus. So disrupting homeostasis by lifting some weights and kind of breaking yourself down, the response to that is going to be a rise in inflammation. That rise in inflammation is part of the cascade that triggers, you know, increasing the thickness of your muscle fibers, increasing your strength, increasing hypertrophy. So if you're chronically doing cold therapy, especially early on in the training block where we're still hitting 8s and 10s and we're getting that volume built up, you might be blunting some of the results you can get from that. Now, where cryotherapy can be really good is if you're feeling beat up and you need to perform for a competition, or, you know, you're set to hit PRs in the gym and you need to be as recovered as possible on that day, then doing something like that the day before or a couple days before can help bring down that inflammation so that you're at optimal performance. But it's just really about, to me, like what phase of training we're in. So if you're really trying to build it might be okay to kind of be like, well, I'm a little beat up, so I might not get that PR set of 5 in the squat. But is that what's going to matter 3 months from now?
Right.
You know? So, like, if you're, you know, taking that long view, it's like, well, I didn't lift as much weight this week because I was kind of beat up, but I lifted as much as I could, and that's going to be the stimulus that kind of keeps you growing and keeps you getting stronger throughout that. So I would just be careful not to abuse cryotherapy and to use it strategically.
Yeah.
Where if, you know, you've got an important event coming up, you're feeling kind of beat up, that's a pretty good time to use something like that. But if you're just sore from doing 5x5 squats, it might be better for you to take a hot bath and let that inflammation play out. And, you know, and I want to differentiate between, like, the inflammation that kind of leaves your muscles sore and is part of that growth stimulus, and, like, your knee being swollen up to the size of a balloon. Those are different things.
Yeah.
I want to stress that.
Yeah.
If you've got, like, an acute injury to the elbow, doing some local, or, like, knee, doing some localized cold therapy, like ice cup massage.
Yeah.
Freeze a Dixie cup, peel off the bottom, and just kind of massage the area till it's nice and cold. That kind of stuff can be a little more targeted, but won't affect the whole system.
Yeah.
So you can get some localized inflammation reduction without kind of shutting down the whole cascade throughout the rest of the body.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I like to call them the ice bomb.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it works really well. And when I used cryotherapy, the main thing was to recover for the next day. And I would use it for pre-competition days. And I would always feel really good, ready to go the next day. All right. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. We hope that we've provided some value for you as far as the information, types of things that we use. None of our stuff is set in stone, but hopefully if you can find one or two things that work for you, that would be fantastic.
And yeah, the big things, you know, make sure that you're eating enough to recover from your training. If you're consistently coming in and you're feeling beat up and tired, try eating a little bit more, see how you feel. You might not move up in weight, but, you know, so you're trying to eat as much as you can without moving out of your weight class is the best place to be. Making sure that you're sleeping, take care of that sleep hygiene, keeping the room cold, keeping the room dark, not getting involved in your screens, and using some sort of heat therapy, cold therapy, alternation to, you know, just kind of help boost those things up and keep yourself calm.
Well, there you have it, folks. Recovery episode number 2, Strength Academy podcast. Check us out on iTunes or the website, albuquerquestrengthacademy.com. Until next time, happy lifting, y'all.
All right, we'll see you next time.